cybercrime, macroeconomic conditions, ESG reporting. You can't predict the future, but you can prepare for it. By understanding your risk, you can make your business resilient to challenges on the road ahead. What's more, you can turn those risks into opportunities. EY helps CFOs, boards, and audit committees see beyond the numbers to uncover the critical insights that make their organizations resilient, even in an ever-shifting landscape. For more insights that matter, visit ey.com/beyondthenumbers.
You know success when you see it, or you think you do, the people in the spotlight. But what about those small business masterminds who succeed at making their money work harder? They do that by having a business bank account with QuickBooks Money, which now earns 5% annual percentage yield. Making your money work as hard as you do? That's how you business differently. Learn more about QuickBooks Money at quickbooks.com/5APY. Banking services provided by Green Dot Bank, member FDIC. Only funds and envelopes earn APY. APY can change at any time.
It can be hard to see the challenges that people we work with every day are going through. I'm Holly Robinson-Pete. Join us on The Visibility Gap, a new podcast presented by Cigna Healthcare. Download it wherever you get your podcasts.
This is Bloomberg Business Week. I'm Carol Masser.
And I'm Bloomberg Quick Take's Tim Stenovek. We're here every day bringing you the latest news from the world of business and finance.
Plus technology, politics, economics, all harnessing the power of Business Week reporters and editors.
Not to mention our 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries.
You can download Bloomberg Business Week on iTunes, SoundCloud, or Bloomberg.com.
You can also listen to our radio show at 2 p.m. Eastern Time on Bloomberg Radio.
Or watch us on YouTube. Search Bloomberg Global News.
So on our radar, of course, this week, another meeting of the policy setting arm of the U.S. Federal Reserve. We're talking about the FOMC meeting and expected to raise rates by 75 basis points for a second time in a row.
Yeah, the question is, what kind of pain is this going to inflict on the American economy, on the American consumer? Rich Miller, economics reporter for Bloomberg News, writes all about it. Rich this afternoon joins us on the phone from Washington, D.C. Rich, the headline, the Fed to inflict more pain on economy as it readies big rate hike. So far, we've learned from many companies that have reported earnings, the consumer is really resilient. So when we talk pain here, what are we talking about?
I guess we're basically talking about higher unemployment. And you're starting to see just little inklings of that with the unemployment claims, folks filing for unemployment claim, unemployment claims for unemployment benefits starting to edge up. And you're seeing even, you know, the tech companies, you know, they have bundles and bundles and zillions of dollars of money, it seems. But even they are saying, well, we're going to start curbing our hiring. We're reconsidering our plans. So you're seeing some inclinations. And housing, you know, if you go to the housing market, that's really slumping, and mortgage bankers are getting laid off. So the pain is going to probably show up in higher unemployment, unfortunately.
How long will it take to, though? We've had a pretty strong labor market. Mm-hmm. Rich, how long does it kind of take for all of a sudden us, you know, the Fed to say, in the world to kind of say, all right, we got some problems in the labor market?
I mean, that's a tough call, right? Because, you know, they're juggling, right? I mean, if it was normal times and inflation wasn't running at 9%, they might be starting to think now, maybe we should, you know, throttle back a little bit and maybe not do 75. You know, but with inflation, you know, at 9% and, you know, even if you say we're going to get some help on gasoline, gasoline's down about 70 cents a gallon, according to AAA. And, you know, if this deal with Ukraine and Russia helps us on food. But even if you take out, you know, oil, energy and food, you know, the core rate is 6%. It's way too high for the Fed.
Rich,
way too high.
I got to ask you, though, and Tim does a great job at always reminding us that when it comes to inflation, you know, the Fed can do so much. It can't fix the supply chain problem. So right. When does at some point the Fed say, listen, folks, I can't fix the Fed, you know, the supply chains, but now I'm seeing, you know, some, you know, significant weakness in the labor market and it's time for us to stop raising rates. I mean, will the Fed possibly get to that point and should it?
I mean, I think it will get to that point. You know, again, it's sort of a delicate balancing act. They also, you know, they have this kind of amorphous thing called inflation expectations. They focus on, mm-hmm. And they don't want to. You know, they don't want people to think that they can't get inflation down, because then people will say, "Oh gosh, I'm going to be, you know, inflation is going to be stuck at 5%. I'm going to ask my, you know, employer for 6%, and then, you know." The company is going to say, well, I'm going to raise my prices by 6%, and, you know, then we're off to the races. So it's more art than science. I wish I could give you, you know, a straight answer. I mean, J.P. Morgan was saying unemployment claims are now running about 250,000 a month,
yeah.
250,000 a week, excuse me, increase. If they're saying if it ticks up to 275, then, you know, the Fed might get, you know, start saying, hey, it's, maybe we should start focusing a little more on growth and a little less on inflation.
So that's where that's the metric that they'll be looking at when it comes to jobs.
I think the jobs market is going to be, the metric. I think that's... That's where they want to see some pain, but not,
Okay, Rich, I'm so glad you used that phrase. They want to see some pain because that's what Mike McKee says over and over again to us. You know, he'll come in, he'll share some economic data that shows that the economy is slowing down, and he'll say, but remember, this is what the Fed wants to see. This is what they're trying to do.
Yeah, exactly. But, you know, I'm trying to think of an analogy, but, you know, it's like you want a little bit of something, but not a whole lot of something. You want to give your kids a little freedom, but you don't want them to sort of start raiding your liquor cabinet, right? You know, so
No, that's a really good point. All right, hey, listen, just 30 seconds here. The data points this week, we get some really important ones later in the week. Is that almost as important, if not more important, than the Fed meeting itself?
Yes, I mean the GDP is going to be very interesting, but one that a lot of people are focusing on that's kind of below the radar is something called the employment cost index, because that'll give a sign for whether wage growth is slowing down, and that's again back to the labor market, and that's a key one. And that one comes on Friday, and I expect the Fed will be focused on that like a hawk.
Right, that plays into those inflationary numbers. So glad we got to check in with you, Bloomberg News economics reporter Rich Miller, joining us on the phone from our bureau in Washington.
This is Bloomberg Business Week with Carol Masser and Bloomberg Quick Takes Tim Stenovic on Bloomberg Radio.
We know that President Biden is talking about the need for the U.S. to get behind the domestic semiconductor industry with the CHIPS Act. And with that in mind, the remarks in the current issue of Bloomberg Businessweek that is out on newsstands, online at Bloomberg.com/businessweek, also on the Bloomberg, get into how the U.S. risks falling even further behind with the tortured CHIPS Act, that act specifically.
That piece by Ian King, U.S. semiconductor and networking reporter for Bloomberg News. Ian, this afternoon, joining us on the phone from our San Francisco bureau, where I guess I should say it's still morning for a few more minutes. Ian, really good to have you with us. Before we get going on this, remind everyone what the CHIPS Act is, what it stands for, and what it stands to provide.
Yeah, I mean, this is something that has been around for more than a year now, and it's basically an attempt to put together a package of about $52 billion, and this is of federal money that would be given in the form of subsidies and grants and so forth to bring semiconductor manufacturing facilities to this country. A portion of it would also go for various kind of educational / R&D kind of subsidies and stimulus packages as well.
Hey, Ian, how do you square what feels like an industrial policy that we see in other nations with kind of a free market economy?
Yeah, I mean, this is the debate that I think explains sort of why it's been such a torturous process.
Yeah.
You have, you know, politicians on the right and on the left that kind of disagree with this kind of thing for, you know, fundamental reasons. You know, on the left, you have people who are like, look, this is corporate welfare. We shouldn't be doing this. You know, these companies are making a lot of money. They should be able to chart their own course. And on the right, you have those who are saying, look, you know, the market determines winners and losers. That's the most efficient way to deploy capital.
All right, Joe Weber, of course, the editor of Business Week, also in studio with us. I mean, I feel like this is one of the big stories of our time. Tim and I were joking earlier, Joel, that, you know, there's chips in everything.
Well, chips in everything, and U.S. has promised, you know, not small amounts of money that they could throw at this. And it kind of comes down to D.C. at this point. Like, what kind of fireworks are we expecting, or are these just like those fireworks when the fog rolls in and everybody takes a recess, Ian?
Yeah, I mean, it's been about to be done for as long as I can remember.
There it is.
But I have to say, you know, speaking to the people we spoke to in the run-up to this, they are saying, look, we're as close as we've ever been. We think this gets done by recess because finally people are beginning to understand the urgency here.
Ian, you've been reporting on this on chip companies for years, semiconductor networking reporter, as semiconductor networking reporter. What's going on behind the scenes here in terms of lobbying, in terms of these companies pushing and pushing for what they're pushing for in D.C.? Like, what are those conversations
lobbying
that are happening?
When you've got $52 billion
on the line, right?
Well, I mean, you talk about $52 billion. I mean, that's quite a lot of money for somebody like me.
Same with me.
Me too.
For the chip industry, it really isn't.
Interesting.
You know, the CapEx budgets of Samsung, of Intel, of TSMC, it's just not that much money. So really, I mean, you know, a cynical person would say, well, go back to Intel's analyst day where the Intel CFO stands up on stage, tells analysts our gross margin isn't going to go down as much as you thought, and here's why. And the here's why is because we're going to get this amount of money in the form of state subsidies around the world as we build out these plants. That would be the cynical approach. The more sort of proactive approach would be, well, this is a Sputnik moment. This is something that, you know, that nation states need to get behind because this is really important for our future.
So Ian, when you think about where the conversation, at least in the U.S. government, can go, I know one of the things that really stuck out to me is, like, you know, those advanced chips, the ones that DOD and Pentagon and others need, like, you know, so much of the conversation is like, how do we secure a supply chain for those products? And do you think that's ultimately like what's going to drive this conversation forward, or is it a much bigger ambition to try and get the U.S. back into a much broader kind of chip game?
No, I think you've touched upon a very interesting point there, because it's become a multifaceted argument. On the one hand, there are the economics, that, you know, semiconductors are increasingly more important as they get into things like cars and things that they went in before. So what if we don't own the technology, then where are we relative to other nation states around the world that we need to be doing well against? And the other argument is, well, security, you know, that these, if you don't need the most advanced chips in missiles, you need the most advanced chips to design missiles, and so on and so forth. So there's been a lot of currents that have, and a lot of threads that have come together to create something approaching a consensus that something needs to be done here, and that we actually need to have industrial policy, which has been such an anathema in this country.
Okay, so that brings us to D.C. and the holdup there. Like, what specifically is holding this up?
Well, you know, surprise, surprise, nothing gets done quite as quickly as it should, given the process. But what's really been going on is that the, you know, elements of the Republican Party have been trying not to hand a victory to the Biden administration. And, you know, they've really dug their heels in and said, look, you can't tie this to other broader goals, such as spending on economic stimulus or on climate goals and things like that. That, you know, if you're going to do this, you have to do it on its own. Otherwise, you don't get it. So that's been the to and fro on this, I think.
So worst case scenario, Ian, let's kind of like game that out a little bit. What does this look like if everything is not?
You're never getting another electric car, Joel. That's what's happening.
Well, you know, seriously, that's one. I've got mine. It's more like yours is the problem.
Exactly.
Yeah, I think you just have to listen to what the chip makers themselves said. It's like, you know, the normal cycle in Washington is 2 years, but we get there eventually at the end when we rush this, you know, rush these things through after we've sort of gone backwards and forwards and horse traded. Chip industry say, no, that doesn't work in this case, because we are making decisions now about the production facilities that we'll have in 2-3 years' time. Give us that certainty, we'll make these decisions and these commitments. Don't, and we'll go and build elsewhere. That's the bottom line.
Ian, just got about a minute, maybe a little bit less here. I mean, you understand the chip industry. You've seen a lot of cycles. Is this a case of kind of bailing out an industry that didn't make smart decisions 5-10 years ago, or is this about something very different in a very competitive global environment, and it makes sense that the government should do an assist here?
It's very different in terms of geopolitical goals, and we also have supply chain security goals that have never been considerations before. Previously, it was all about efficient use of capital, and that's why I have a supply chain spread around the world. Now we're saying we need to look at this differently, and that's what's going on here.
You want to know about chips? This is the guy you talk to. Ian King, thank you so much. This is the remarks in the current issue of Bloomberg Business Week. Ian King is U.S. semiconductor and networking reporter at Bloomberg News, joining us from our San Francisco bureau. And our thanks also to Jill Weber, editor of Bloomberg Business Week, joining us here in our Interactive Brokers studio. We mentioned this issue is out.
Yeah, check it out on newsstands now, online, and at Bloomberg.com/business.
When cyber criminals strike, the difference between a catastrophic event and resilience is preparedness. Finance leaders who plan ahead can thwart the damage posed by ransomware. Yet in a recent EY poll, only 23% of directors expressed confidence in their organization's ability to respond to a ransomware attack. Cyber preparedness is just one facet of the complex risk landscape finance leaders face every day. Now more than ever, it's vital to keep ahead of developments. Cybercrime, macroeconomic conditions, ESG reporting. You can't predict the future, but you can prepare for it. By understanding your risk, you can make your business resilient to challenges on the road ahead. What's more, you can turn those risks into opportunities. EY helps CFOs, boards, and audit committees see beyond the numbers to uncover the critical insights that make their organizations resilient, even in an ever-shifting landscape. For more insights that matter, visit ey.com/beyondthenumbers.
You know success when you see it. Or you think you do. The people in the spotlight, athletes, actors, artists. But what about the people behind the scenes? You know, the ones who make it all happen. The lighting engineers, the sideline photographers, the caterers. They're small business masterminds. And if there's one thing they have in common, it's making their money work harder. That's why they have a business bank account with QuickBooks Money, where they are now earning a generous 5% annual percentage yield. Yes, 5% APY. Making your money work as hard as you do? That's how you business differently. Learn more about QuickBooks Money at quickbooks.com/5APY. Banking services provided by Green Dot Bank, member FDIC. Only funds and envelopes earn APY. APY can change at any time.
You're listening to Bloomberg Business Week with Carol Messer and Bloomberg Quick Takes' Tim Stenovic on Bloomberg Radio.
Look, just to repeat a stat that I think is, you know, just speaks to the power of where we are with this week of earnings, Carol. We got half of the market cap of the S&P 500 reporting this week.
That's a whoa. Big part of that market cap is Apple, which will be out, one of the largest market cap companies in the world. And there's a couple of stories out this week, including about them announcing a rare iPhone discount for some buyers. We're talking about buyers in China.
Yeah, don't get too excited here, okay? So it's going to take up to 600 yuan, that's about $89, off the prices of its top line iPhone Pro series between July 29th and August 1st. Let's get into it with Anurag Rana, Senior Software and IT Services Analyst from Bloomberg Intelligence. Joining us on the phone from Chicago, Anurag, I mean, what the fact that we're even talking about an $89 discount off the top line iPhone 13 Pro for a period of, what, 5 days just in China, kind of speaks to the power of this, right? And the fact that Apple doesn't do stuff like this much. How should we understand it?
Yeah, it is the power of the brand. And, you know, you're right. We don't see that stuff. But frankly speaking, things in China are a bit different right now than the last few years because of the COVID lockdowns. And as you know, we get into a new model coming into September, October timeframe. So you have a backlog of products just lying around. You know, you want to get rid of it.
Does it show that, you know, it's been Apple's so good when it comes to its supply chain? I mean, this is in Tim Cook's DNA, right? Like, he's a supply chain guy. He understands supply and demand, and Apple's pretty good at understanding what consumers are going to buy around the world. Does it show weakness for the top-of-the-line iPhone? I mean, should investors be concerned about this?
Well, there's not much you can do if the factories are closed down and the government's not allowing anybody to go outside and shop. I think that's beyond Apple's control. I don't think it speaks anything about either Tim Cook's ability or Apple's brand recognition. It's just an unfortunate situation right now, and the supply chain is going to be front and center when they report later this week.
So, you know, this one is such an important one, Anurag. I always just feel like, because Apple is a great play on what's going on with consumers, as you guys were talking, the supply chain, there's just so many different moving parts. What kind of story do you expect, kind of on a bigger macro scale, that Apple will share with us or reveal with us?
You know, for me, I think the biggest story is the strong dollar. I think that's going to make things look really worse for a lot of technology companies over the next, you know, 7 to 10 days than they really are, because the dollar has moved so much in the last 6 months compared to when, you know, some of these estimates were first written. Now, when we looked at estimates going back in November, you know, they have barely budged, and the dollar is up, you know, just on euro alone more than 20%. So I think there is going to be some disappointment when it comes to reported results or the forward guidance coming from these companies. But frankly speaking, I think it has to do more with the cosmetics of it because of the dollar rather than the actual economics of the business.
So would you say, depending on what kind of results we get, that investors should, if there is a dollar impact, kind of disregard when it comes to thinking about kind of the valuation or the fundamental story at Apple?
See, from my side, yes, I've always looked at constant currency growth rate of different products. But remember, we are going into an era where we should see some slowdown in top-line growth for a lot of these companies, largely because of macroeconomic concerns. Now, so far, we have seen some pretty decent results from all tech companies that have reported so far. But I've been pleasantly surprised at it. But it has to U-turn, sometime or another, just because the overall global economy is at a much weaker place today than it was 12 months ago.
Hmm. So where should we be looking? I mean, what I love about Apple earnings, Anurag, is that we actually get a somewhat good idea of geography. I mean, they don't break it down as much as I would like them to break it down, but we do look at it for sort of a barometer of the global consumer. So what should we expect, given that you say that the global consumer, the economy, is in a worse place than 12 months ago?
Yeah, so for me, I think America's is going to be okay. I think Europe is going to be slightly weaker. Hmm. And I think China is going to be weaker, not because of the consumer, but because of supply chain constraints. And I personally think that China is going to bounce back much more strongly over the next few months if the Chinese government is able to get the COVID problems under control.
That's so hard, though. I mean, we just read a story about China, sealing off the iPhone maker Foxconn in Shenzhen for 7 days to battle COVID. So it seems to be like a never-ending thing for China.
No, that's what I'm saying. It will take a few more months. I'm not saying it's going to happen overnight, but it's going to take some time. So I'm not saying this quarter, but as I look forward, I think structural changes for people buying phones in China, or iPhones in China, I should say, not all phones, should be okay. I am more concerned about Europe than I'm concerned about Asia, frankly. Mm-hmm.
It is actually, we got to run. What would surprise you, Anurag, just quickly in this last 30 seconds that we might hear from Apple?
I think them beating the numbers is going to surprise me at this point, because everything else looks to be, something that's going to cause them a little bit more headache rather than, a pleasant surprise.
All right. Well, some great things for us to think about ahead of that release. Anurag Rana, Senior Software and IT Services Analyst at Bloomberg Intelligence, joining us on the phone from Chicago. And Apple does report after the market close on the 28th, so a little bit later on this week.
Yeah, it was Thursday.
It's a big one.
It is. And Carol, Apple stock only down 14% this year, so it's outperforming the S&P 500, down about 0.9% right now.
I think about this week, and just some of the companies that are reporting, certainly in the big tech space are in the investing space, but just in general. We'll see if there's a consensus by the end of the week. You're listening, watching Bloomberg Business Week on this Monday, and this is Bloomberg Radio.
I'm driving in my car. I turn on the radio.
How about you let me drive?
Oh, no.
Who's gonna drive you home?
Honey, please, I'll do the driving.
Drive on.
Excuse me, I want to drive.
It's the question that drives us.
This is the Drive to the Close.
That funky music will drive us till the dawn.
On Bloomberg Radio.
All right, just about 10 and a half minutes left in today's trading session, and we are getting ready to wrap up the Monday trade. It does feel like kind of holding our place, if you will, because we've got a Fed meeting this week. We've got mega big tech reporting, the names like an Amazon, a Microsoft, an Alphabet, a Meta. Who am I leaving out? Microsoft.
Did you say Apple?
No, Apple. That's what I was leaving out. I mean, there's just so much going on. And then there's this huge drop of important economic data points. Right now, though, we are seeing a little bit of buying into the close. We've got the Dow in positive territory, but kind of little changes overall.
Yeah, volume down, too. Let's get into it with Christopher Zook, the founder, chairman, and a chief investment officer at CAZ Investments, joining us on the phone from Houston. Christopher, good to have you with us. What's more important, what we hear from Fed Chairman Jay Powell or what we hear from Meta, Alphabet, the parent company of Google, of course, and Apple and more?
I think right now it's going to be much more important what we hear from companies, because unless the Federal Reserve says something completely out of the expectations of what people have been looking for, it's literally kind of old news. We're going to get 75 basis points. If they do 100, that will obviously take precedent. But other than that, it's going to be really what happens with earnings, because that has people on pins and needles right now.
So tell us a little bit about your firm in terms of what you do and what the investment environment maybe tells you about kind of our macro situation.
No, a little bit about the firm. We basically are investors of our own capital, and then we invite investment advisors and their clients to come alongside of us in whatever it is that we're doing. And so we have the luxury of never having to invest ever. And at the same time, we can invest in anything, anywhere, anytime, which means that we have a full rein to go wherever the opportunity set is. Today, what the opportunity is showing us is that this market is beginning to price in a recession. We have seen the valuation compression that one would expect. And now what we're looking at is, when the earnings decline happens, what we refer to as the double punch to the gut, will we have that, you know, that real second leg down, which we think is very possible,
right,
as the earnings have to be, valuations have to be accounting for those lower earnings.
Hey, Chris, you guys look at private equity deals specifically, correct?
And we do everything, markets and private.
Okay, so in terms of the public market side of it, or even the private market side of it, it's been gangbusters, or it was certainly prior to this year and certainly the first quarter. You say the market's already beginning to price in a recession. So does that mean we're getting to the bottom of that and that we're starting to see more optimism come back, or we're not quite there yet?
No, I think we're not quite there yet. And I'll tell you the main reason why is that we have not seen the capitulation. There was one article over the weekend that y'all ran that talked about a major Wall Street firm saying the capitulation has already happened. Maybe from a short-term perspective, it got a little bit too negative in June. But the reality is that, no, the average investor is not capitulated. They have just now begun to feel afraid enough to go, oh, the market's bouncing, I feel a little bit better. And then if we start to sell off again, that's when you could see some real whoosh or panic that could occur. If one looks at the similarities right now between 2008 and 2009 and 2022 and potentially 23, they're a little eerie. Now, we hopefully are not going to have a Lehman-type event that occurs, but it's very plausible that this market grinds lower until we see some kind of a catalyst that causes everybody to kind of, quote-unquote, give up the ghost. And at that point in time, we're going to put in a major bottom. But valuations have got to be a lot lower than they are today in order for that to occur.
We only got a little bit of time, 10 seconds. What would one of those catalysts be?
Catalyst on the negative side would be a credit crisis, where we have people that are over-levered that just cannot fund it, and it starts to create contagion. That's what we'd be most concerned about.
But you think that's likely? 5 seconds.
No, I mean, it's very plausible. There's definitely room for that to happen in the fall or as we get into the spring.
Thanks for listening to Bloomberg Business Week. Download the podcast on iTunes, SoundCloud, or Bloomberg.com.
And you can also listen to our radio show at 2 p.m. Eastern on Bloomberg Radio, or watch us on YouTube. Search Bloomberg Global News.
The countdown has begun. From May 14th to 16th, 1,000 global leaders will gather in Doha for the Qatar Economic Forum, powered by Bloomberg. Join heads of state, influential ministers, and leading CEOs to make new connections, gain unique insights, and uncover valuable opportunities in one of the world's most rapidly rising regions. Request your invite for this exclusive event at QatarEconomicForum.com.